Highland Falls, El Paso, Clarksville, Watertown, and from other important military capitals around the globe, Eye on Defense brings the top military and defense issues into focus. Eye on Defense is proudly sponsored by Big Sarge Pre-Owned TA-50 Emporium and The Last Hope Jewelry and Pawn. And now, citizens of Earth, brace yourselves for the next episode of Eye on Defense. Defense, 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 defense.
All right, we're back, everybody. This is episode 238. This is 8 March. Just give everyone a heads up. For the next couple of weeks, I will probably be doing shorter episodes. Reason being, I got some stuff with my job coming up. Very busy, and I got to squeeze episodes in when I can, and they might not be that long. So tonight, only 6 stories tonight, maybe 15, 20 minutes, short stories. Anyway, we'll see how that plays out. If I get more time the next couple of weeks, I'll do longer episodes. If I don't, then just giving you a heads up. For those that listen, and I appreciate everyone that listens, new listeners and longtime listeners, and I think I do have some. So let me get started. We're going to start with CENTCOM X, like we have been for a while. There are three, 6, 7, and 7 March. So 6 March, Houthi kills innocent civilians with missile attack at approximately 11:30 a.m. local time. 6 March, an anti-ship ballistic missile was launched from Iranian-backed Houthi terrorist-controlled areas of Yemen toward MV True Confidence, Barbados-flagged Liberian-owned bulk carrier while transiting the Gulf of Aden. The missile struck the vessel, and multinational crew reports 3 fatalities, so 3 killed, at least 4 injuries, 3 are in critical condition, and significant damage to the ship. The crew abandoned the ship, and the coalition warships responded and are assessing the situation. This is the 5th missile fired by the Houthis in the last 2 days. 2 of these missiles impacted 2 shipping vessels, MV MSC Sky 2 and MV True Confidence. One of the missiles was shot down by USS Kearney DDG-64. I mean, just out of control. Next, U.S. CENTCOM conducts combined humanitarian airdrops in Gaza. U.S. CENTCOM and Royal Jordanian Air Force conducted a combined humanitarian assistance drop in northern Gaza on 7 March at 3:20 p.m. local time to provide essential relief to civilians in Gaza affected by the ongoing conflict. The combined joint operation included U.S. Air Force and Jordanian C-130 aircraft and U.S. Army soldiers specialized in air delivery of U.S. humanitarian assistance supplies. U.S. C-130s dropped over 38,000 meals, providing life-saving humanitarian assistance to northern Gaza to enable civilian access to critical aid. So when you see where it says combined humanitarian assistance airdropped, I thought it was something else. Combined joint operation. When you see combined means 2 different countries. And then joint means 2 different services, 2 or more services. So combined U.S. Air Force and U.S. and Jordan, and then joint U.S. Army and U.S. Air Force. So that's what that means. Moving on. Last one, 7 March, Red Sea update between 3:35 p.m. and 4:55 p.m. local time. U.S. CENTCOM conducted self-defense strikes against 4 mobile Houthi anti-ship cruise missiles and 1 Houthi UAV in Houthi-controlled areas of Yemen. Additionally, during this time frame, CENTCOM forces shot down 3 UAVs launched from Iranian-backed Houthi-controlled areas of Yemen toward the Gulf of Aden. So it just keeps going and going and going. Next, big news was President Biden gave a State of the Union address. This is from Defense News, Bryant Harris and Leo Shane. President Biden outlines military plans to build a port in Gaza for aid. 7 March, the United States military will establish a temporary port in the Gaza Strip to deliver humanitarian aid to Palestinians while continuing to send weapons to Israel. U.S. President Joe Biden confirmed in a State of the Union address Thursday. Today, basically, right? Moving on. No U.S. boots on the ground, Biden said. A temporary pier will enable the massive increase in the amount of humanitarian assistance getting to Gaza every day. and Israel must do its part. Israel must allow more aid into Gaza, ensure that humanitarian workers aren't caught in a crossfire. Senior administration officials told reporters earlier Thursday the mission would route humanitarian aid through Cyprus to the temporary port in Gaza. The White House is also pushing Israel and Egypt to allow more aid through land crossings at Rafah and Kerem Shalom. The announcement drew bipartisan applause from lawmakers gathered and came amid calls from President Biden for Congress to pass his long-stalled foreign aid bill to arm Israel, Ukraine, and Taiwan. Israel receives an annual $3.8 billion U.S. military aid, but the White House said the Defense Department lacks the replenishment funds needed to continue arming Ukraine from U.S. stockpiles. There's also a $2.4 billion bill for U.S. CENTCOM to respond to upticks and attacks on American forces, as well as a $542 million for Indo-Pacific Command in response to FY24 unfunded priorities list. Here's kind of interesting last paragraph I'll do. It says, President Biden also promised a strong response to other national security threats, including strikes to degrade Houthi capabilities in the Red Sea. A quote from the president: as Commander-in-Chief, I will not hesitate to direct further measures to protect our people and military personnel. Take that as you will. Next, China. Two China stories. First one, Gordon Arthur, Defense News. China unveils new defense budget with 7.2% increase. China is raising its defense budget by 7.2% for 2024. The government announced on 5 March during the second annual session of the 14th National People's Congress. I wonder if they have a hard time passing their defense budget. The new budget is nearly $236.1 billion U.S., of course, which is one-fourth of what the United States spends, I guess, maybe one-third. China's military expenditure is about 4 times that of Japan and 12 times that of Taiwan. China's true defense spending likely falls higher than what is officially announced. For example, its space program, which is managed by the military, defense mobilization funds, provincial military-based operating costs, military pensions and benefits, dual-use research and development efforts, and paramilitary organizations like the People's Armed Police and the Coast Guard are not incorporated into the defense budget. Just a question, how much is the People's Armed Police budget actually, though? Probably nothing, right? The Coast Guard, probably not that much either, but I don't know. The Stockholm International Peace Research Institute think tank estimated that in 2022, China's actual defense budget was 27% higher than what the country reported. So what would that be? What's 27% of 236? I'm fixing to do math here. 4 into 23 is 8 times 4. 3 times 8. 4 into 23 is 6. So add 60 billion to 236. So 300 billion is what, basically. That's a guess. I'm probably wrong. Somebody out there that knows math better than me is probably laughing right now. Moving on. Second, very interesting story from Defense Post. Joe Sabala, 7 March. China says building fourth aircraft carrier. China is in the process of developing its fourth aircraft carrier to rival the U.S. Pacific Fleet. To rival the U.S. Fleet in the Western Pacific, a PLA, which is People's Liberation Army Navy, Admiral has announced. I think the United States has 11 carriers. I probably should have looked that up. So now the China is going to have four. Well, they want to build a fourth. How about that? Speaking during an annual legislative meeting in Beijing, a PLA Navy political commissar claimed that his progress is on track and he has not heard of any technical bottleneck regarding the development. He also said that the public would soon find out if the new carrier will be nuclear-powered, just like some of the most advanced warships in the U.S. Navy inventory. To date, only U.S. Navy and French navies have nuclear-powered carriers. And I know the Australians are trying to build one, right? This allows them to carry out missions for extended periods without refueling. We are building aircraft carriers to protect our national sovereignty and to protect our territorial integrity, he stressed, as quoted by South China Morning Post. Prior to the announcement, illustrations of the fourth aircraft carrier being built at the Jiangnan Shipyard in Shanghai surfaced online. The announcement comes nearly 2 years after Beijing launched its third aircraft carrier, the Fujian, F-U-J-I-A-N. Despite touting as the country's most advanced warship, the Fujian is not nuclear-powered because Beijing reportedly has insufficient naval nuclear reactor technology during its development. Nonetheless, the aircraft carrier boasts several advanced features, such as electromagnetic catapults and arresting devices to launch heavier and larger fixed-wing aircraft. But the Fujian has yet to undergo sea trials. China's recent maritime developments are in line with its ambition to develop a modern blue water navy within the next decade. Blue water status is achieved when a maritime force is capable of carrying out sustained operations across deep waters. The force must have more than one aircraft carrier projecting power far away from home. Despite its growing size, the PLA Navy is still regarded as a green water navy, operating mostly near its shores. I mean, I don't know if we ever talked about this. How come the People's Liberation Army, everything is a People's Liberation Army, and then they throw Navy in at the end? You notice that? Anyway, always wondered about that. Now we have two more domestic stories. Oh, three domestic stories, and then we're done. This is a Navy story, kind of on the tail end of the Chinese Navy story. Senator Sullivan says CNO, Chief of Naval Operations, assured him, in quotes, that the shipbuilding plan will have 31 amphibious ships. Remember, we talked about this for a year. Now it's coming up again. This is from Justin Katz, 7 March, Breaking Defense. A U.S. senator today said the Chief of Naval Operations assured him that the Navy's next long-term shipbuilding plan will reach the 31 amphibious ship mandated in the law. Here's a quote. I met with the CNO, which means Chief of Naval Operations, last week. I asked her what we're going to see in the shipbuilding plan. That's Senator Dan Sullivan, Alaska. And she assured me this year's shipbuilding plan will have 31 amphibs at a minimum. A spokesman for Admiral Lisa Franchetti, who's the CNO, Commander Desiree Frame, told Breaking Defense today the Admiral previously confirmed her commitment to reaching 31 amphib ship fleet and demonstrated that commitment earlier this week with a combined Navy-Marine Corps trip with the Assistant Commandant of the Marine Corps, Christopher Mahoney, to several Gulf Coast shipyards. Here's a quote from the Admiral. As I said in my confirmation hearing, I'm committed to working with the Commandant of the Marine Corps and the Secretary of Navy to ensure that we meet the requirement of 31 amphibious ships. Lawmakers' increased sense of urgency to build up the amphibious ship fleet is at least in part driven by admissions last year from the Marine Corps leadership that a lack of ready ships prevented the service from responding to events around the globe, such as civil and humanitarian crisis in Turkey and Sudan. And in quotations, my quotations are in parentheses, not making combatant commanders very happy. Those are my comments, not the article. Moving on. Last year's shipbuilding plan did not project the Navy's achieving 31 amphibious ship fleet. Contravening, is that a word? Contravening? I think that's a word. It's obviously a word. A law that was passed in the year prior mandating the Navy do so. The discrepancy drew the ire of defense hawks in Congress and led to Admiral Sullivan, in part to angrily question, Sullivan, the senator, to angrily question Navy Secretary Carlos Del Toro during a hearing about why he wasn't, quote, following the law. We went over this kind of in some detail. In response to the senator's questions and subsequent letters to lawmakers, Del Toro largely balked on the committee's demands to immediately update the shipbuilding plan, instead writing he is in constant consultation with the Commandant of the Marine Corps and the Chief of Naval Operations to provide the right mix of capabilities of the Navy's fleet, which was, I just didn't understand it then. I don't understand it now, but I understand now that the Chief of Naval Operations, Franchetti, says we're going to get 31 amphibs, and everyone's going to be happy with that. And I guess Del Toro, or Secretary Del Toro, has got his answer. Moving on. Two Army stories. Lawmakers press aviation leadership on FARA cancellation. This was a big story, I don't know, a month ago when Army killed FARA, which was one of their signature future vertical lift programs. This is from Valerie Encina, Breaking the Fence, 6 March. Industrial base concerns played a role in the Army's decision to radically change its aviation modernization plans as two legacy helicopter production lines, probably Chinook and Black Hawk, which we'll find out in a second, would have gone cold in 5 years under its previous strategy, the Army's top acquisition official told lawmakers today. Of course, we're talking about the Honorable Doug Bush. There's quite a few quotes from him in here, which we'll get to. The Army canceled the Future Attack Reconnaissance Aircraft Program, also known as FARA, in February, arguing that the procurement of the bespoke, I love that, bespoke reconnaissance helicopter was no longer viable when small drones have become ubiquitous on battlefields such as Ukraine. As part of the savings from the cancellation, the Army said it would buy more UH-60M Blackhawks from Lockheed Martin Sikorsky and CH-47F Block II Chinooks from Boeing. Those are the two lines that were in danger of phasing out by 2030 if the Army's original plan had come to fruition, according to Doug Bush. Of course, we know him as the Army's Assistant Secretary for Acquisition, Logistics, and Technology, also known as a SALTE. Here's a quote from Mr. Bush. The conflict in Ukraine has reinforced the importance of the United States having a robust industrial base that is equipped to respond to the demands of the battlefield, the nation's stockpiles, the needs of our allies. In light of these lessons learned, the Army has determined the previous path carries too much long-term risk, said Mr. Bush in a written testimony to the House Armed Services Tactical Air and Land Subcommittee. The service will continue to develop the future long-range assault aircraft, FLRAA, with Textron, and will make additional investments in unmanned aerial technologies, the Army announced at the time. Here's some lawmakers, got some concerns, three of them. We'll go over them a little bit. The first one is Democrat Representative Joe Courtney of Connecticut. Connecticut's kind of important because that's where Sikorsky is, I think, but I'll keep going. He pressed Army officials on how far his cancellation would impact the industrial base, noting that Sikorsky already employs 600 engineers in his home state of the competitor for the FARA program. Remember, it was Sikorsky versus, I think, Bell Textron again. They went against each other for FLRAA. Anyway, he's like, what's the deal, you know? And here's the Honorable Doug Bush. He responded that most of the funding that is being shifted as a result of the changes will remain in the aviation portfolio, and that the FY25 budget will show an additional investment in Black Hawk research and development funds. Engineers working on manned aircraft, we hope over time, can come to work on unmanned aircraft. He said, we still need engineering talent, especially if you're not killing Black Hawk, which you're not going to. All those folks working on FARA, I guess, can transfer over to Blackhawk, but I don't know. Maybe. Moving on. Representative Rob Whitman, a Virginia Republican who chairs the House Armed Services Tactical Air and Land Subcommittee, told reporters in a roundtable earlier today he didn't understand how the Army made a 180-degree turn on FARA, one of the service's biggest aviation priorities, and wanted to hear officials lay out what technologies need to be developed to fulfill the Army's reconnaissance mission in the future. And finally, New Jersey Representative Donald Norcross, a subcommittee top Democrat, noted that FARA is the Army's third failed attempt at developing a replacement to the OH-58 Kiowa Warrior Reconnaissance Helicopter. I think he's right about that. And I think the Army might have it figured out this time with unmanned stuff. All right, last story coming up. Going long, Army to unveil deep sensing cross-functional team. So Ashley Roque, 7 March, Breaking Defense, she does a good job of laying out the previous cross-functional teams, which at the end of the day, this what they do is, should I go over this? Cross-functional teams basically write requirements for the Army's top priorities. That's just the easiest way to say it. And here's a quote from Mr. Bush. In the meantime, the Army Service, anticipates the return of the delayed Dark Eagle, which is the hypersonic, long-range hypersonic weapon is what they're calling it, I guess, hypersonic testing this summer, Acquisition Chief Doug Bush said. As the U.S. Army prepares to field a slew of longer-range missiles, it is standing up a deep sensing office to help identify technology and a formation that needs to help soldiers with targeting, according to Service Chief General Randy George. What he's saying is we've got these long-range missiles. We need something that can see out far to target for these long-range missiles. I mean, why would you put a man or a woman in a FARA to send them out to go find these targets when you can send a freaking drone to do it? And if a drone goes down, so what? Build another drone. Let them do the targeting for your long-range missiles. I think that's the idea of killing FARA and this new CFT, I think. Moving on. The tentative plan is to stand up the deep sensing cross-functional team within the Army's Futures Command. Of course, we know the Army's Futures Command is responsible for the requirements. The Honorable Doug Bush's team, the Assaultee, they're responsible for taking the requirements, working with industry, and building whatever the widget is, a FARA, whatever. New pair of boots, pair of gloves, whatever. The cross-functional team is unveiling. Official unveiling is expected to come later this month at a symposium in Huntsville, Alabama. The four-star general told reporters today. What General George did not provide is specifics about the establishment timeline or the mandate or where it is. He said team members will be looking at ways to spin out capabilities like high-altitude balloons or stratospheric unmanned aerial vehicles to assist in targeting. That's pretty high up. My guess is Fort Huachuca, but I'm moving on. There's fairly inexpensive tech, and it gets back to sensors, you know. How that's going to look inside our formation, that's what we're working toward. When the Army stood up AFC in 2018, it included 8 original CFTs, long-range precision fires, which is at Fort Sill, next-generation combat vehicles, which is up in Detroit, future vertical lift, which is at Redstone and Huntsville. The network, I think, gosh, where is that? Aberdeen? I'm going to say Aberdeen. Proving Ground, Maryland, Air Missile Defense, which is at Fort Sill, Soldier Lethality, Fort Moore, used to be Fort Benning, now it's Fort Moore, Synthetic Training Environment, I'm going to say that's down in Orlando, Florida, and Assured Position, Navigation, and Timing, I'm going to say that's in, as a guess. I think that's in Aberdeen, too. Somebody check my work. Last year, it added a new contested logistics shop. I don't know where that's at. Fort Gregg Adams, that's a guess. The new deep sensing CFT will make 10 such teams. I should know this. I have a podcast, and I'm supposed to know all these things. I'm looking this up. I'll try to remember this for the next episode. Contested logistics. I'm going to say it's at Fort Gregg Adams. The future CFT announcement comes as the service prepares to field a host of new long-range weapons like precision strike missile, mid-range capability. I think they're calling that SMURF, right? The Strategic Mid-Range Fires. And eventually a new hypersonic missile. Each of those weapons are in varied timelines, and the precision strike missile and mid-range capability are set for this year. The Army and Navy have been working in tandem on long-range hypersonic weapon development, which the ground service dubs the Dark Eagle. I guess that's okay. I mean, come on, the Army. You don't call something Army Dark. You got to come up with something else than that. Like Redstone. I'm kidding. Sergeant. Remember they had a sergeant missile and a corporal? You got to call it something like that. Over the past several years, the Army experienced a series of pre-launch test failures, calling them to postpone fielding from the end of September to the end of the calendar year, and that is a question mark. In December of 23, just a couple of months ago, the Honorable Doug Bush told Breaking Defense a mechanical engineering problem was to blame for some of the recent test failures, and the service had a plan in place to correct it and potentially get the weapon to the soldier within 6 months. That's June. However, he told an audience today that he does not expect the Dark Eagle testing to resume until this summer. Our goal over the summer is to get back to the range, both at the advanced subsystem level with the launcher and also with the missile. So far, so good. I think we are understanding where the challenges are. And I take him at his word. I think he's a good guy, Mr. Doug Bush. But Mr. Bush, Dark Eagle is a horrible name for an Army missile. come up with something better. And that's it, I think. Let me double check. Yeah, 25 minutes, a little bit longer than I thought I was going to do. I thought I'd do 15 and be out, but 25 minutes is okay. Like I said, over the next, to kind of remind everybody, over the next few episodes, probably the next 5, 6 episodes, it'll probably be shorter than usual, I think, just because of stuff I got going on at work. Anyway, as always, thank you very much for listening, and good night.